right. Welcome to the Home Stretch Podcast with Adrian Durant. Thank you for joining me again. And this evening, we have another special guest, Wallace Spearman Jr. Ashley, thank you for joining us again as well.
Yes, sir.
And on the Home Stretch, for you new listeners, the Home Stretch Podcast, we like to talk to just amazing track and field athletes, world champions and medalists and Olympians, and just talk about their journey and how they got to where they got, you know, how, what does it take to become a champion? We want to find out directly from the champs. So let me run down Wallace's resume a little bit here. He was a two-time NCAA outdoor champion in the 200 meters, 200, my favorite event. Three-time USA outdoor champion. His PR in the 200 is 1965, which is currently number 9 all time. And he's also run 996, so fast 100 runner, and 45.22 for all of you folks who think you can avoid the 4. Can't avoid the 4, so stop trying. 2005, he was second in the world championship, and also he was the American and collegiate record holder in the 200. He ran a 20.10, crazy race. I was there for that race, crazy race. And it was the second fastest in history at the time. 2006, he had the 300-meter indoor world record, which I was there for that race, too. That was when LeSean, Ron Clement. Yeah, yeah, good race. Another one, another world record. And then third in 2007 and 2009 at the World Championship in the 200. So an extensive resume for those who don't know of Wallace, but we're going to hear it all from him. So how'd you get started in track?
Man, I had the fairy tale story, actually. So my father ran track in Arkansas back in the 80s.
I heard.
He and Mike Conley, I'm sure you've heard that name before.
Oh, yeah.
They both went to Arkansas together. So I didn't really have much choice in what I did when I was growing up. I tried to go play basketball. I tried to play football, baseball, played soccer. I even tried golf. But at the end of the day, Arkansas offered me a scholarship in football. They withdrew their scholarship so close to signing day that there weren't any more football scholarships really available. So I ended up walking onto the track team at the University of Arkansas. But, I mean, from my earliest memories, myself, Mike Conley Jr., Stanley Redwine Jr., I'm not sure if you all know who he is. His dad is the head coach at the University of Kansas. John McDonald's son, Sean McDonald, we all grew up together at every indoor and outdoor track meet at the University of Arkansas. So, I mean, track chose me is what I tell people if they ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you if it was destiny. I saw your dad was a bronze medalist at the Pan Am Games. So, I mean, it was kind of...
Yeah, he was all right. I always give my dad crap.
He was all right.
So my main goal, my first year at the University of Arkansas was to wipe my dad's name off the record boards.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
I had every intention. I really didn't focus on winning. I didn't focus on going pro. I didn't focus on anything. My main goal when I went to the University of Arkansas was to wipe my dad's name clean off the board. So I have every record there except for the indoor 4x2. But by the time, you know, we were in school, they weren't really running that anymore. So it was a successful college career for me. I was only in school for 3 semesters and I ended up going pro. But I'll tell you this, I mean, as a walk-on at the University of Arkansas, I was there with Tyson Gay, Veronica Campbell, Omar Brown. And I can see Terry Gatson, who ran 44. Like, I can tell you all my teammates from whenever I was in school.
Yeah.
And every one of them played a part in my career, who I am today.
Yeah, I was going to say, you definitely had the goal
of...
Pardon me?
Oh, I thought you had a question. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Don't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no. No, this is your floor, so you can interrupt as many times you want. But I was going to say, you had the goal of having your father's records gone, but you also walked on to a really in-depth team. Cause just like you said, you had all these Olympians on your team. So what was that? Was it intimidating? Are you just like, okay, I'm going to just go on and just see what happens?
Well, I'm sure you all know this just as well as I do, but when you go to high school, typically most people that go to college are the best in their high school. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm going to just be honest with you. Like, I came into school with a chip on my shoulder. All the other athletes had scholarships and I was a walk-on. So I used to get teased and picked on at practice because every day I'd work so hard. I mean, I even had a roommate, Saeed Ahmed, and the day before indoor nationals where I broke the collegiate record, I mean, I did 300 sit-ups and 100 push-ups before the race. And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, man, I got to work. You know, nothing comes free. That was the one thing that I was taught. My family, we grew up poor. I was on free lunch from kindergarten, man. Like, so there were no hand-me-downs, no handouts, no nothing. The only thing that you got when you're hard times were passed down to you and sometimes some knowledge. But as far as anything that you wanted in life, I realized at a young age I had to work hard. I'm not saying my teammates didn't work hard by no means am I saying that, but I saw how hard they worked and I knew if I wanted to be where they were, I had to work harder. So, I mean, I work with my coach. I see a lot of kids nowadays, they do all this extra stuff and their coach doesn't know about it. That's not how you do it either. I mean, as a pro, I think you both know as well. If you don't have a good relationship with your coach at the end of the day, it's probably not going to work. So I think that's the one thing that I did on accident, but it worked out for me.
Yeah.
That you know what? It's crazy because I saw that, you know, when I was kind of looking into your background that I think I had assumed that you came in with them from Barton, man. I didn't know that you were a walk-on. I was a walk-on too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's, so you know, it's a lot you know the struggle then, man.
Oh, absolutely. I know the walk-on chip on your shoulder. I mean, I was on full my second year. So it was like, you know, because I went
Me
in.
Me too.
Yeah, I was a walk-on freshman running 48 in high school, and I was the leadoff leg of the SEC championship 4x4 my freshman year. So it was like I had a baggy bodysuit and everything.
There you go.
You know, they was like, hey, freshman, we need a leadoff. Here's an XL. You know, I was like 140 pounds in an XL bodysuit, man. I was scared, but you know, that walk-on chip, man, that's pretty cool, man.
Exactly. So for me, actually, I was supposed to be a long jumper when I went to Arkansas.
What?
So my whole fall, I mean, I was working it. I jumped 24.10 in high school. So, I mean, I ran 10.6 in the 100 in high school. I ran 21.2 and 50 point. I long jumped 24.10. So, I mean, I wasn't really phenomenal or anything. But if you know anything about Arkansas track and field, I won state in 7 events. And I didn't really go to practice. I didn't really work that hard.
Yeah.
Because that was all my fault, but I saw what was in front of me and I felt like to be good, all I had to do was beat the people in front of me. I didn't really go to any national teams or I didn't know about that stuff. So like, I didn't feel like I had to work that hard then. When I got to Arkansas, my eyes were open.
Yeah, Arkansas wasn't a crazy high school.
Yeah, we weren't a sprint school. Not at all. And then even Arkansas, whenever we were there, before we got there, they were known for jumps and distance. They didn't really have many sprinters. So Exactly.
Man.
Yeah, now they're a powerhouse for sure.
But I'll tell you, my freshman year before I got there, I mean, my dad was a volunteer assistant at one point. Like, I knew a lot of the pro guys that were there. So I got to work out with them on occasion. And I remember there was a guy named Melvin Lister, and he ran 44 in the open, or in the 4x4. He made the team, the Olympic team in 04 in the triple jump. I think he jumped 27 or 28 feet in the long jump. And I remember my freshman year, I'm trying to walk on, and he looked at me and he's like, hey, you got some skills, but you suck. He said, you're going to be a home meet specialist. You ain't going to get a uniform. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm the type of person, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to bust my butt to do it. Like, that's just how I operate. And then, so walked on one nationals outdoors, and I remember I called him on the phone and I was like, I won nationals, what's up?
Yeah, now what?
And you know, like, it wasn't combative or anything like that. Like, that was one of my mentors, but he's like, you win one national championship and you got the nerve to call me? He's like, man, Robert Howard won this many and Melvin, this person won, has 28 All-Americans, they got this, they got that, you win one?
He didn't give you no credit.
I mean, I was like, man. Burn. None. None.
Oh, man.
None. But I mean, it made me who I am today. So, like, I put that mentality. Arkansas was really known. Like, I mean, before our meets, Coach McDonald would take you into a room and he'd tell you, all right, Ashley, you're in the women's 100. I need 10 points. You know what place you got to get 10 points? Yeah. All right, Adrian. But I mean, he played middle games with you as well. Adrian, I need you to get 1 point. And you're thinking to yourself, like, dang, you think I'm about to get less? Oh, no. So, like, it was just, I mean, iron sharpens iron. I don't care if you broke the world record. They're going to find something for you to do better. And that was just, that's how I came up through the ranks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's a crazy group because, you know, it was the same thing with me. When I walked on to South Carolina, they had won the 4x4 at the national championship the year before, and the women won the entire national championship. So the team was at its high point. And so I walked on. I was training with like Otis Harris, who ended up getting a silver in the 400.
Fortenberry,
who was dropping 40, you know, 44 splits indoor on 200-meter flat.
One of the coldest, coldest anchors ever. Exactly.
Crazy.
Y'all showed
crazy.
Up.
And so when I got to SC, I had a choice. I was like, man, I could train with the scrubs or I could get train with these dudes. And they was dragging me every day. But eventually, it was so you got to, like you said, steel sharper steel. But that group you had there, man, that came straight from Barton. With Tyson, Veronica, Omar came with y'all too.
Yep,
Omar. Man, y'all man, yep. Going against Keisha, y'all was
on the men and the women side. And you said you went, actually went to Morehouse? No, you got Morehouse. You couldn't have went to Morehouse. That's all men. What'd you say you went to?
University of Illinois. Yeah, I was at Illinois with Tanja.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh shoot. So yeah, you had some rollers there too. But I mean, both of you all understand it. I mean, at the end of the day, like you have to, I mean, you really have to dive into the culture if you want to be successful. It's not something where, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, Zion Williams, super athletic, great talent. But I mean, this dude's born 6'8", like 250. And he has a 40-inch vertical. Yeah, you have all the skills to be great. All you have to do is polish him. Track is not like
you
can bust your butt all day, every day, and it never gets easier. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. Track is not one of those sports where you're like, okay, I can go through the motions and just be good. No, it's not possible, man. Like, it's not.
No, you have to put in that work. And it's also a mental thing, too, because it's not like you could just get up and go. Like, when you were on the track with 8 other people and all of y'all are talented at this point, and then there's so many different factors going on around you, it's just like, listen. All y'all are talented, but it's who has the most heart when at the end of the day that's going to get to this finish line first.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then it's even worse it's worse to me in the sprints because it's like you got to be at 100% to run 9.8. And then you got to try to come back and run 9.7. So you got to be at 110%. It's like, you know, it's crazy. You can't have like an off day, like it be a half a percent off because then you're at 20-30. And you're smoked.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's unforgiving. You know, there's no leeway.
Absolutely.
So it's not about saying
to me, the hardest two events. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. The two hardest events for me, if you ask me mentally, are the hurdles. I don't care if it's men or women. It's always stacked. Always.
Always. Especially in the US. Jumps.
Because,
man,
literally. Yes. But the jumps talk so much trash. Like, I'll never forget my first Olympic trials. Tyson and I were walking out to the track, and we heard Melvin Lister was talking trash to Jesus Christ. I can't even think of his name right now. I went to LSU. Oh, my God. I can't think of his name. That's about to drive me nuts. But they're sitting there talking trash right there in front of us. And I mean, like, not like, oh, you suck. I mean, like, they got personal. And it was intimidating. It was super intimidating, but I mean, it makes you have tough skin.
Yeah. And
as far as like your mental aspect. So for me, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I gained confidence in races because I worked hard, and I got to the point where I was borderline cocky and I got humbled really quick. When you can be really good in college, but that don't mean you're going to be good in the pros. So I know a lot of college kids watch, oh man, they running this time over there. Not understanding, like, this person's been traveling for 24 hours, stuck in customs, lost all their bags. It's 3 degrees and they ran this time, and you over here watching from your comfort of your home thinking I can do. No, you can't. But like, after indoor, so I break the collegiate record. My first race, I go to Mount Sac and my brother's there with me. And this is I'm telling on myself right now, but literally I called my brother over and I was like, man, I'm about to run 19 seconds. And he's like, dude, 19 is not easy. I said, man, I don't care about none of that. I said, brother, pray with me. And he was like, all right. And once again, I told you, borderline arrogant, but please forgive me. I've grown up since then. I said, dear Lord, please let what I'm about to do be wind legal. Amen.
The thing is, you have to be like that.
Wait. Dear Lord.
My brother was like, you going to hell, dude. He's like, I'm going to hell. He's like, you are cocky as crap. But I'll tell you, to this day, like, my brother tells everybody that story now, and now he has a daughter. And he literally tells her, like, if she says anything arrogant or cocky, he's like, man, you got it. He's like, that's the one mistake that I had whenever I was growing up. He's like, you know, you couldn't nobody tell you crap. Like, nobody could tell you anything. If my coach told me, our coach told us at one point, he's like, nobody can run 9.8 without taking steroids, and nobody can do this, and nobody can do that. Mm-hmm. And now he's like, you know, you heard that and you took it as a challenge. I heard that and I believed it. That's one thing that I'll say my career is, I think I was in the headspace to be really, really good, but I got around some people who, I got around enough people and the right slash wrong people who had influence over me. And they were telling me, you know, you can't do this and you got to respect that. And I shouldn't have listened to any of that. Like, don't get me wrong. You shouldn't be arrogant and cocky to the point where it seems like you're boasting or you're a jerk. But at the end of the day, like, you're running against 7 or 8 other people, depending on the 8 or 9 lane track. And it's just you. So either you believe in yourself or you don't. You have the rest of the world doubting you. You shouldn't be doubting yourself. Like, that's the one person that should believe in yourself, that and your coach. So, I mean, I can sit here and tell you stories, but I mean, I'll let you all talk again. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, you can talk as much as you want.
You're dropping gems, because what you just said is like, you know, you're dropping gems, man.
The one thing that he said is about being arrogant or cocky, but it's a very fine line between confident and cocky. Cocky, you could be rude, you're disrespectful, X, Y, and Z. But when you're confident, you have to, just like what you said, you have to believe in yourself. Like, that, you have to be the one person that is confident that, you know, you, when you step on this line, it's about to be crazy. It's about to be bananas. So absolutely, at the end of the day, because even like what you just said with the prayer, I say this prayer just like, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want, but I want it, so I'm going to get it. So,
you're getting me hyped.
Yeah, so you got to hype yourself up somehow. And it's not even about being cocky. You got to step on the line and be like, I'm about to get this thing. I don't care what, if he ran 9.8, I don't care if he ran 9.8. You ran next to Usain Bolt and you were playing around with him. Like, that type of, that level of confidence that you have to have running 19.6. is what everyone should have. And it's not about being cocky or arrogant at all.
No. You're right. Absolutely right. And, you know, I feel like people only use the word cocky when they're offended by you being confident or, you know, like, those are the people who use the word cocky or arrogant. Because everyone I know who's good thinks that they're the best ever. Like, come on. You don't even have to, you know, like, you're not a flashy, you never was a flashy, cocky guy. Tyson, definitely not a flashy, arrogant guy. But you can't tell me that when you step on the line, you're not like, I'm the best ever. I'm going to beat all of them. And he's thinking the same thing. And you have to kind of, that has to exude off you, like radiate off you, like, I'm the man, I'm the best ever. So I don't see how you win without having that. You know, I think that just comes with the territory. You have to believe it.
And
I'm about to say two stories real quick. So, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say two stories really quick. So 2005, you know, Justin Gatlin gets the bye. So we have 4 Americans at the World Champs in Helsinki. Tyson Gay ends up in 4th place. Now, USA sweeps 1, 2, 3, 4 in the 200. That's a feat, but nobody wants to be 4th. Let's just be honest. Mm-hmm. You fast forward 2 years later to 2007. Tyson wins the 100. And in the 200, no one really knows who's going to win. It's Bolt, myself, and Tyson. And Bolt's never beat me in a race. I don't think he beat Tyson once. The first time we raced him, he beat him. So they were, you know, tit for tat. But so you don't know who's going to win the race. Tyson ends up winning the race. And I think I got 4th place. Rodney Martin was there. And I'm sure I know you know exactly who that is. That's one of your SC boys. Oh, yeah. So I think he gets 3rd. I thought I got 4th. So I'm over there, like, freaking out, spazzing. And Tyson walks up to me, and he has the message. We're training partners, so you think he says something like, you know, oh, keep your head up. But no, he walks up. He's like, I just drug you like you drug me in 05.
and I remember and I like, that.
And I'm like, dude, this what you want to talk about right now? Wait till off season, bro. Like, my bad. Excuse me. I'm sorry. But you're going to have to see me, bro. Like, you're going to have to, like, I was irate. I was so upset. Like, I was pissed. So, stuff like that, and I never called Tyson cocky. I never called him arrogant, but like Tyson, I don't know what, like, Tyson shows you all one thing, but if you know Tyson, and I'm not, like I said, I'll still never to this day call him arrogant or cocky, but literally Tyson had the confidence of a champion and championship pedigree. Now, so let's fast forward to 09. So 09, you know, we all, the group breaks up. I end up going to A&M. I'm training with Aline Francie. And so I run like 24-7 in the 250 before world championships, which I came to it 19-7. For me, I always wanted to run 24 in the 250. Like, I always wanted to. I did it.
Yeah.
Go to Worlds, like the coaches mark off the 150. I run 14-1. Mm-hmm. At this time, Bolt runs 9.58 and 100. So the world is like, everybody here is running for second. Bolt and I are like best friends. So we're walking out, and this media person, I don't even know how he got to the final car room, but he walks up to Bolt and he says, "You saying, I heard you're going to break the world record. Is that true?" And Bolt looks at me and says, "I never said that." And I'm like, "Dude, you didn't say no, but I'm not going to call you out right now." So security comes, they grab this guy out. We're walking out to the track, and I look at Bolt, and I'm like, "Hey," I said, "you and I are friends, right?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, we boys, right?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Why are you acting weird?" I was like, "We're like brothers, right?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "So this is me. If you're going to break the world record, you got to tell me, because I'm not trying to get hurt messing with you." And he's like, "No, bro, just run your own race." I said, "Nah, player, don't do that to me. It's me." And he's like, "Man, I don't know what I'm going to do. Just run your own race." I said, "Aha, here we go." So I don't know if you guys remember at the time, but they had two false starts at that time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, "All right." Now, one thing about me, if someone false starts that next, the next start, the next gun, my start is always, it's always never good, but it's trash. So the first start, I'm in lane three, Bolt's in four. Or actually, I think I'm in four, Bolt's in five, Steve Mullins in three. Mm-hmm. So they shoot the gun and I'm gone. Pow, pow. Bolt had stumbled and they false start. Steve Mullins had false started. I go by Bolt on the turn. So they shoot the gun and he kind of like spazzes, he sees me, and he's like, "Dude, you were catching me." And I was like, "Brian, come out here to lose." I don't know what you think this is. I said, "Everybody else is intimidated to run against you, but not me. Like, you still the little lanky boy that was playing tag the first time I met him. Like, nah, bro, you better bring it." And he's like, "All right, okay, okay." So if you go back and watch that race and do this, I'm American. I don't know what that means. My coach, Aline, is from Grenada. He's sitting in the stands. And they say, "Runners, take your mark." And I hear somebody say, "Wallace." And I look in the stands, my coach, and he says, "Run for second."
Oh.
What did you just say to me?
What?
"Run for second."
That's crazy.
I said, "Man, you lost your, like, you my coach, bro. You know what I'm capable of." Like, and Bolt proceeds to run like the most flawless race I've ever seen with my own two eyes and goes crazy. 19-19. Now, as a track and field athlete, you both know when somebody runs that fast, you're thinking in your head, like, okay, if he ran 19-19, I had to run like 19-5.
Yeah.
I was close. 19-8. He beat me by that much? God dang.
Yeah, so you would be like, "Go, I was jump right testing, there.
Go through all this." Exactly. Like, no, you got drugged, but okay. So we go back to the back. I see my coach, and he's like, "Dude, I said run for second. You got third." And I was like, "I thought you said that bull crap. Don't you ever say stuff to me like that." But, like, long story short, I see a lot of people, whenever Bolt was running, they got intimidated because you racing somebody. I see a lot of kids nowadays, it's like, Ashley ran 10.99, I can't beat her. And Adrian's in the race too, and he ran this, and this person ran that. I don't care about none of that. I don't care. If that's the case, why are we racing?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we racing if you already know the outcome of this? So, like, or if that's the case, why are you nervous?
Yeah.
I don't care about any of that. Bolt, every time he stepped in the line, bro, I'm like, "You have to show me you're better than me on this day. You can race me 100 times and beat me 99. 900 times, I'm still going to be like, bro, I don't care. You got to beat me today." So, I mean, that's, I don't see that mentality a lot with some of these kids. Some of them I do, and I love to see it. I do. Like Christian Coleman, I'm not going to lie to you. I spend some time with him.
Yeah.
He don't care. Noah Lyles doesn't care. I don't know much about Michael Norman, but when I watch him run, I'm like, "Dude, like, let's go at these boys." So, I mean, that's my story. So, hopefully. Hopefully somebody learned something from that.
Nah, man, that's real. You can't be afraid. Look, man, I was the same way. I raced Bolt a couple times. He annihilated me, but I never was afraid. I was like, "Yo, I'm going to try to get out on him." It never happened, but it didn't matter. And I raced you SECs a couple times. I got out on you before. You came and ran me down and left me. But hey, man, I had you for like 20 meters. You actually came and spoke to me after one of those races. It was like, "Hey, man, don't ever do anything like that again, man."
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you was like, man, you need you to come train with Lance. You was like, man, you got to start like that. You need to come train with Lance because he'll get you right. I was like,
you're finished. You're finished for sure. Absolutely.
I know my finish wasn't on point, man. But I always had that good start, though. The finish.
I think the females.
You should have been first leg on somebody's 4x1. I know that much.
Yeah. I would know. You know what's crazy? I could not win the 100, like, you know, get ninth in the 100 SECs, but I would hand off, like, I can hand off, you know, I'm handing off ahead of Florida. Like, it happened a couple times. Like, regionals, like, for some reason, I just could put it together on that first curve.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, so Jonathan Forster
like that too. Go run the open 400. Mm-hmm. For sure.
No, I was going to say, females don't so have Fortenberry, that much shit talking.
You might not make the final. Mm-hmm. Wait, hold on. Wait, no, I got to hear that. You got to say that again. You say that again.
I said, I don't think females have that much shit talking.
You said females don't shit talk?
What?
No, I said not that much shit talk. Not that much shit talk.
What?
Man.
I don't buy it.
Okay. I'm going to say this. Mm. And for anybody listening, please understand, I was raised by a woman, so I don't mean this with any bad intentions. If a male cheats, he sucks at it. If a female cheats, you'll never know unless she wants you to. Yeah. When a male talks trash, we suck at it. It's blatant. It's all open. When a female talks trash, y'all do little stuff like move a girl blocks or
yes, now
like,
see,
not talk to them. Like y'all do stuff like y'all play like y'all are playing mental warfare where men are just like y'all play games. Y'all's is twice as bad as ours. So no, just sit here and say talk trash because y'all do.
No, we do mental stuff. So like in the call, you'll do something to like, oh, if somebody like if the girl is putting on my pin, I'm like, you're not putting on her pin, something like that. But not like blatant, like, oh, you beat me last time. You're not about to get me around the corner. Or you be thinking it. For sure, we be thinking it. Like, this bitch ain't about to get me. I'm about to get her first curve. But y'all are just like blatant. Y'all will have be noise in the call room on the men's side and be like, nah, we ain't about that life.
The men, I used to hear stories about from before our time, the Mo Green days. Like I heard they were really vicious with their trash talking at the start line. Like they talk about you like your wife, girlfriend, all kind of stuff. Like, whoa, like before you get in the blocks.
I'll keep those stories for offline. Yes. So I caught the tail end of them. I know those. I live those stories. I'm not gonna lie. My first world championships, I was like, I don't even want to be pro anymore. Like I want to go back to college. I hate this. And then those guys kind of retired and withered out. And I was like, thank God, because I hated track and field. I literally hate. If you could go back and see stories, like, I don't even know if you remember or not, but Tyson and I, first world championships, Helsinki, we moved out the village. We're like, we're not staying with Team USA. Like, no, we're not dealing with this.
It was What's that. It was toxic. It was like that.
DeBron Blanton went home. Dude, it was bad. It was bad. Like, if you ever get a hold of Karan Clement and he'll talk about that, ask him. It was really, it was physical. It was bad. Like, no, bro, I think I graduated high school I'm my first year pro. I think I was 6'2", 175. Who am I fighting? I've been in a fight, not in a real fight, not with John Capel, who's 6 foot 205. Like, what am I gonna do with that?
Oh, see, y'all got physical. And
it's
stuff.
Friendly now. Also, I'll say, track and field is friendly now.
Yeah, like these are good kids out here.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I saw some female fights too.
Oh no, we scrap, but we probably would scrap over some dude or something. They were probably scrapping over a dude or something.
I mean, nah, these kids out here. I think there's some good kids in the sport, man. You know, they're on social media. They're positive. You know, and they have their little things going on. I saw a post the other day. It was like people were talking about the college times, like who. You know, is yada yada, and I think Noah Lyles on his Instagram was like, somebody was like, "Oh, those boys gonna give you competition." He was like, "That was a funny joke." Like, yeah, all right. I like to see the young rivalries developing, but they're keeping it, you know, they're keeping it clean, so that's good.
But do you think that rivalry is very important in track and field?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Absolutely,
you need it. Like, you need the personalities. You need the competition. You bring people to the sport. Listen, I still talk about you to my kids. I was like, hey, man, it's hard work. Don't think that Bolt just broke the world record. There's plenty of times he done took some L's to y'all, to you, Tyson. That happened. People forget about those days. Like, oh, he just was breaking world records. No.
So I'll tell you this, and this came from Glenn Mills. So the Usain Bolt coach came to me the year 07. So when Bolt started running fast, or actually 08, I'm sorry, started running fast, et cetera. And they said, I want to thank you. And I was like, for what? He said, so we're only running hundreds because of you. He said, Bolt couldn't really beat you in a 200. So we decided, you know, we're going to run the 400 next year. We're out of the 200. We're going to start running 400s. And I was like, okay. He said, but Bolt, and we were at, what, like Crete. I ran 10-1. Bolt ran 10-03. But before Bolt ran the 400, he was begging his coach, coach, let me try the 100. Let me try. And he was like, no. So finally he gave in. He ran 10-0. So the next year he came out, he starts running all these times. And as Coach Mills said, you know, we were about to move to the 400.
Yeah,
we were tired of you.
So
and
you,
I mean, and I'm not saying that to brag on myself, but literally, like, man, look, like, Bolt and I were, I remember we ran in Jamaica and nobody knew who we were. And Asafa was the big man on campus. We tried to go to this party. We couldn't even get in the party.
Yeah.
Like, oh, only athletes. Like, dude, we're athletes too. So the next year, like, Bolt can go anywhere. We go to China and this girl's crying because Bolt won't give her an autograph. And he's like, I'm about, my race is in 3 minutes. Like, I'll do it afterwards. And she starts crying. No. Like, so like literally your story can change that quickly. You never really know. And I'm but even for me, I mean, as well, like I went from like 10-0 racing Bolt to like 30 straight losses. I think I had one more in there, but I mean, you just never really know. And yeah. People mature at different ages and there's all kind of stuff that goes into these things that you just can't really, you can't prepare for them.
Yeah.
Man, so, I'm just still on the fact that you just told me you made Bolt switch to the one because he had to get up out of that two. That's what I heard.
That his coach told me that. I didn't, his coach told me that. I don't know. I if you put a Bible right here and you put me in court, I would swear that that's a true story. Now, they might not admit to it now because Bolt is who he is, but I promise you that true story.
And his start in 100 was rocky because he was only running 10-0, that 10-0 range. So it was like, you know, I don't know.
Yep. So he ran 10-0 his first race, came back, ran 10-0 at Trinidad. Then we go to Jamaica, and I still have the newspaper clipping to this day. The newspaper article was like, Bolt versus Spearman, big clash in the 100-meter dash. And I was like, oh, that's real cool. You know, we're hanging out, blah, blah, blah. So you start the race. I run 10-11 as a season opener. Like, that's phenomenal for me. Bolt runs 9-7. So we cross the line, turns around, he comes to me, he's like, I thought you were catching me. I won't use the words, but I was like, B, you ran 9-7. Like, who's about to catch you? Ain't nobody catching you. You almost bucked the world record. What was that a catch? Like, I cursed him out. Like, what are you talking about? You stupid. And he's like, I ran what? I was like, dude, you ran 9-7. He's like, oh, for real? I'm like, dude, you. So then we go to New York and everybody's like, oh, that's fake. And I said, man, okay. If he didn't really run 9-7, y'all saying he ran 10-0, which means I ran 10-4. Mm-mm. I ain't run no 10-4.
Go out there and you're break like, the world. No, I seen him. I know it's a 9-7 because I was in that race and I seen him up there.
Exactly.
You're like, look,
I crossed the line. I'm dipping with the regular people. He's on the backstretch.
You're like, man, no, I just ran the fastest season opener of my career. And this man up here waving at the crowd. Ever.
Still to this day, that's my fastest season opener. So I'm like, nah, bro. I mean, agents were saying it's fake. Coaches were saying it's fake. And he goes and runs, breaks the world record in New York. And I was like, I have never felt so much satisfaction from somebody else doing. And that's one thing, like, I think that's why he'll tell you. Like, I like Wallace because when he was beating me, he was humble. When I was beating him, he was humble. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you're like, Wallace is confusing because I feel like he was happier for me winning the race and breaking the world record than him. Like you're supposed to be sad for you right now. And I'm like, nah, bro, we boys. So like, if I got your back, I got your back.
Yes.
So if you beat me and you breaking world records, I need to figure out what I'm doing wrong to be where you are, because I feel like I could be. So yeah. I mean, that's part of the game too.
That's really
you're one of those people that's spiteful and angry when somebody else wins, like, mm-hmm. I'll be cordial with you and I'll talk to you. I don't want to deal with you. Like, if you can't be happy for somebody else, now don't get me wrong, you lose a race or something bad happens, you know, you take your day or your 2 days, but if you're the type of person, like, I can't be friends with you anymore because you always beating me. Like, what?
Nah.
Like, dude, nah, I can't rock with that. That's just, some people are cool with that. I'm not, I'll be, like I said, I'll be respectful, I'll be nice to you, but I can't, like, I can't rock with you like that.
Hmm. I mean, everybody could be best friends until we step on the line. When that happens, then I don't really know you.
Absolutely. That, absolutely.
Everything, you talk shit, is cool.
For 100%. But that's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's business.
Yeah. Like,
that's what people, oh, Nike cut me and Adidas cut me. And I'm like, dude, don't get it wrong. Like, if you ever think you're friends with these people at these shoe companies, you are out your mind.
No.
Like, it's business. You run fast, you get treated good. You run bad, they don't know you. But let's just be honest. Like, okay, if you, man, what? And I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's fair. I'm not, but what I'm saying is, like, I trust everybody to be who they are. Mm-hmm. I just pray that I am of sound mind to recognize that. I'm able to see that. Mm-hmm. I see that this is a business. So whenever they fly, oh, they're flying me first class or business class, and they're giving me bonuses, and I get all these special shoes. Like, that's going to stop one day.
Yeah.
That's going to stop. There's very few people that it doesn't stop for. Like, maybe Michael Johnson, Carl Lewis, Usain Bolt, Flojo, maybe, like, people like that, okay. Like, those are icons and legends. Outside of anybody other than those people, it's going to stop one day. Like, you're not going to be in the limelight. You're living a fairy tale, and there's an expiration date on it. So enjoy it while you can. Save your money. Save your bread. At the end of the day, you want to have enough. You want to have done enough nice things for people that whenever you finish, you can still walk through this sport and people still recognize or respect you.
Yeah.
If you're a jerk on the way out, when you leave, people, they're going to be cheering and hollering and hooping and celebrating. I couldn't wait for this person's downfall. Like, I don't want to be that person.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? Because I swear, like, you retire and then you pop up in the final of the U.S. trials. So what are you, where are you at right now?
All right. So I currently am training two young ladies that long jump and sprint. And I'm coaching some kids out in Arkansas. So I'm trying to give back to my community. Like, I wanted there to be, we have a kid right now, Isaiah Satania, and he's in what, 11th grade, and he broke dang near all my jump records, and he's trying to break the sprint records, like, and I want him to. Mm-hmm. He just signed to go to Texas A&M, and he's going to play track and run football. So I'm working with some high school kids, junior high kids out here. Like, I always wanted to go to the military whenever I was little.
Yeah.
I actually made a pact with one of my best friends growing up that we were both going to be Navy SEALs. Couldn't quite do that. So you see this hat, it says Elkins Police. So it's a small town where I'm from. Like, I go out there and basically volunteer. So I'm a reserve police officer. I'm the bailiff. Like, but I get to do positive things in the community. So I get to go out. Like, one of my sponsors is a meal prep plan. So I went and talked to them, and they donate like 100 meals a month that I get to go out and give to underprivileged kids and people in need now. So, like, it's just a lot of meaningful work for the police. Like, I'm not going to say all police are bad or all police are good, but if I have the ability to do better, like, I'm going to show people by example. You know, you don't necessarily have to be afraid of the police. There's good and bad just like anybody else. And why don't you step up and you can completely be the police and you can give back? And then it can look how you want it to look. So that, and then, like, I'm working with USA Track and Field. I'm on the board of directors. I'm the current chair of the AAC. I work with the USOPC. So a lot of these COVID protocols and testing and the domestic meet that they've created, and so, like, a lot of volunteer work is what I'm doing right now. I have a lot of headaches that come for free. But at the end of the day, I think it's preparing me to get a job in the sport, which I love afterwards. So just paying it forward, and hopefully it pays off at the end of the day.
So you said afterwards. So are you still competing?
I guess you'll have to wait and see.
Oh, you see? I know. I'm
still training. How about that?
Okay, you're still training. Because I know before you know it, you're going to see Wallace back up on a U.S. final and be like, I thought he was running.
Well, you know, I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, you know, Chirandi could still run, if Kim ran until he was, you know, however, I don't even know how Kim can still look the same
right now.
But you said something interesting, man.
He ran 9.9 at age 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
Kim Collins did.
Mm-hmm. And he looks like he did when he ran it the first time.
Yeah, he still looks the same now. He doesn't age. I think it's cocoa butter, man.
Exactly.
You said something. You said a couple things, man, that I really wanted to reemphasize, man. I like that you're doing the work you're doing with the police. You made a good point, man. You know, we could just complain about police, and all, I'm sure, you know, many Black people have had negative experiences with the police. But for you to go in there and, you know, you're doing the work yourself. You put your money where your mouth is. Like, instead of just complaining, you're like, you know what? I'll go in there and I'll do positive things and I'll be a positive representative, and people can see people, someone who looks like them in the police, you know, when you're dealing with.
Exactly.
And because you come from the community and you came up how you came up, you're looking at people like normal humans. So you're going to get a regular interaction. You know, when I'm in certain parts in Atlanta, you know, like the really Black parts, a lot of the police are cool because they grew up there. That's their people, you know, in certain sections. So I think it's important that you're doing that work. And that's good stuff, man. You're out there living your purpose, man.
You also mentioned earlier that
this is the first time I've actually said anything publicly that I'm doing this.
Oh, okay.
Hey, it's all good, man. Just, you know, doing the good work.
Yeah. So you said earlier that you had about 30 losses, maybe more. But how do you keep mentally coming back? Like, what is it? What is your thought process when you go through those trying times?
I mean, I don't care if you break the world record or if you run 25 seconds in the 200. There's always something that you can improve on. Mm-hmm. The young ladies that I work with right now, one of them, her PR was like 760 in a 60 meter dash, and she runs 728. Mm-hmm. As an opener for her. So, I mean, she's over the moon. So do you think her first words to me were, "Oh my God, I'm so excited"? No, it's me. Her first words were, "What'd you see? What can I do better?"
She want to win. She want to get better.
So, regardless if I win, lose, or draw. Exactly. I mean, her dad was right there, and her dad was thinking, he's like, "What'd you think about the race?" And I was like, And he's like, "Jesus Christ, like, you are impossible. Like, can't nobody make you happy?" I was like, "No, don't get it twisted. I'm happy, but like 728, but it's not about to win nothing. Like, we're trying to win." Like, that, I asked her at the beginning of the year, "What are your goals? You know, what's your price? And if you didn't get the results that you wanted, and you're still within the price range that you are willing to pay for it, then why are we celebrating? Don't, I give you 10 minutes, you know, blah, 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 but we got to get back to the drawing board. It's time to work." Mm-hmm. So if I go race Bolt, I mean, like, the year I ran 19.6, Xavier Carter came over there and wore me and Tyson out, and Bolt as well, 19.63. Everybody told us, "Oh, Michael Johnson ran 19.3, and that was an anomaly. You know, no one will ever run that fast. They can't even run faster than 19.7. Okay, cool. 1963. Then we go to freaking Grand Prix Finals and Tyson runs 68 or 66. And I was like, "Man, these dudes aren't better than me." Mm-hmm. So I run 1965 at the end of the season. And my first words were, I told my agent, I was like, "Find me another meet. Like, I can run faster. Find me another meet." So now you go out there the next year or 2 years later, I'm racing Bolt and he starts running these times. And I'm like, regardless of what anybody thinks, like, I grew up with this dude. Like, I grew up racing him. I've watched his every step, every race. I've watched his progression. There's nothing that you can tell me that would make me doubt that I can't compete with him. Now, you were in 1919. Like, once again, my price. Like, what do you think I can run? Like, you know, you taste, "Wallace, what do you think you can run?" Like, I ran 19.6. Like, I feel like I can run 19. I feel like I can run 19.3 on a great day, maybe 19.2, maybe 19.4. Like, I feel like I could run that, you know, through my career. Now, I didn't do everything that I needed to do to run that. So, and that's nobody's fault but my own. But long story short, like, Bolt doesn't run 19.6 every race. Bolt doesn't run 19.1 every race. So why would I feel like I can't beat him?
Yeah.
Like, that's the standard. Don't get me wrong. I'm not blind. I realize he's the man to beat, but I feel like I can beat him. Tyson beat him. Mustafa beat him. He got beat. I mean, he's got beat time and time again. It doesn't happen very often, but it can happen. Yeah. So yeah, he's on his A game. If I want to beat him, I got to get A game and I can beat him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's just kind of believing in myself. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And at this point in your career, what keeps you motivated to keep going?
I had a career where I know I did some things wrong and I didn't get exactly the results I wanted. So this is my last chance to do that. And regardless if I make a team or don't make a team, imagine regardless if I try or not, like, I'll do everything that I need to do. Like, right now, what I'm doing isn't necessarily for track and field. It's for me and my lifestyle afterwards. Mm-hmm. I need to show myself that I can be disciplined enough in my sport, the sport that I love, to achieve my goals. And whether I achieve my goals or not, if you can display that level of discipline, you're going to be a success in life. If you can carry that over to being a doctor or a lawyer or even a janitor or a teacher, whatever the case, if you're that disciplined and you can display that when needed, those are the people that are successful in life. So this is more for me in life after the track than anything.
I love that you just said that, because it has to be some type of intrinsic motivation. I tell a lot of the younger kids that I'm from, that where I'm from in the Virgin Islands, like they're just like, they want a contract. They want a contract. They want to do this. But it has to be some type of motivation inside of you to make you get through the tired time, because the money is not going to just always come, but it's something that has to keep you pushing even when there's not money in it. Because I think that they watch Bolt, they watch Justin Gatlin, they watch Allyson Felix, and they think that, okay, that's everyone's lifestyle. That's three people. There's a whole hundreds of other track athletes that don't have that same lifestyle. So you have to also have something that's going for you yourself and not just watching what other someone else has had, because you don't know what their life is like. So I love that you just said that.
And about to say, as far as finances, that's one thing our coach taught us when we were young. If you ever find yourself running from money, then you should be done. Mm-hmm. Like, now, don't get me wrong. If you do what you love and you love what you're doing and you bust your butt and you're talented, if you have any level of talent, the money's going to come. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you need good people around you to negotiate good contracts, et cetera, but the money's going to come. I mean, I go out there and win a race. I mean, I'm not bragging. I promise you I'm not. But just for people who are listening so you can understand, because I know I just literally had somebody ask me today, did you make money when you ran track? And I'm looking at them like, nah, I'm just living my life broke off favors since I was 19 years old. Like, yes. I mean, I went to the Diamond League and won the Diamond League. That was $100,000 in one race. I never thought
about
the money.
You won 25. You got 25 from that 300 world, that 300 record, didn't you? Yeah.
And then 25 more the next day for the 4x4. But we didn't even know that was going to be a thing. Like, mm-hmm. We literally had no idea. Like, I called Jeremy Warner and the meet's in Arkansas. So I was like, man, what's the world record in the 4x4? And 301. And I was like, man, I think we can break that. And I was like, you know, what are the so we broke down the splits. And I was like, okay. So I, no meet directors, no agents, no nothing. I literally called Jeremy Warner and I was like, hey, Jeremy, let's try to break the world record in the 4x4. And he's like, all right. He's like, but if I run, then Daryl has to run. I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, all right, well, we got Karan and LaShawn. Who do you pick? I was like, all right, well, LaShawn or Karan just ran 44.5 indoor the year before. Karan, hey, let's try to break the world record. He's like, well, who are we going to run with? I said, Jeremy and Daryl. He's like, all right, I'm game. So we thought we were running this race for free. No prize money, no nothing. Mm-hmm. Mr. Tyson came in and was like, man, you know what? Y'all broke the world record in my meet. Hey, I'm going to reward you all. I'm going to give you the same bonus for this event. And we were like, okay, thanks. So literally, it was just how good can we be? So people who go out there and run for money, every last one of us, Ashley, Adrian, both of you all know, you're going to have a good year. You're going to have a bad year. You're going to have a good race. You're going to have a bad race. Everything that you do is not great. So if you're not making money, are you really disappointed by that? Like, yeah. Are you not motivated anymore because you're not making money? Like, this competition not enough? Is pride not enough? Are the medals not enough? The simple sense of accomplishment within yourself, is that not enough? And if it's not, then like, don't get me wrong. I bet you there are some people that can run for money, but I'm not one of them. And I don't know too many people that are super successful that started off that way. Now, eventually, you know, you do become like, you know, it becomes a business, but you let somebody else handle that.
Yeah.
Let them handle that and you focus on what you need to focus on.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I don't believe in that chasing the money thing. You know, some pros do it and they kill a season. You know, you can't run super fast at USA's, make the team, and then think you're going to run nonstop up until the world champs and then run at the world champs and not have a break in between and get back to base. But some folks are just chasing the money. Absolutely. The money, and you make the team and get smoked at the world championship. Don't even make the final. That's crazy.
And there's several ways to chase money, I'll say. And I've seen people do this as well. So if you go win a world championship, so I'll tell you right now, let's say, you know, small chance or no chance at all, call it what you want. I go out and win a gold medal at the Olympic Games. If you think I'm retiring, you're crazy.
No.
Guess what comes next? Next year, I'm going to train too. But next year, I'm going to collect checks. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You win a gold medal, you don't get your money back. Like, that's not how you get it. You get it the next year when now all of a sudden people are like, hey, we want you to come to our meets.
Yep. That
but once again, you have to be strategic, chasing money. Exactly. Because now all of a sudden you're getting, oh, I'm getting $100,000 to show up, $200,000. I've seen people get $750, $1 million to show up to a race. I'm going to every place I can to get this money. If you keep losing, guess what that fee is going to do?
Guns down.
It's out the window. Out the window. You're taking all these L's. And then guess what? Another way that you can chase checks and that people don't really realize, oh, I want a gold medal. I signed with Kellogg, and I signed with Powerade, and I signed with Beats by Dre, and I signed with photo shoot, mistraining, yep. Butt whooping.
Yeah.
No more money. Buy money.
They demand so much. Checks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're at a photo shoot. Yeah.
I hope you got enough to retire on, because if you do that long enough, you are not going to be relevant anymore. Like, the sport of track and field and any other sport, I don't care who you are. LeBron James has won a championship with the Lakers. He's won a championship with Cleveland, and he's won a championship with Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Does he look like he's going to win a championship this year? No. Who's talking about him this year? Nobody.
Nobody.
In the sporting world, it's what have you done for me lately?
Mm-hmm.
So you can win 10 years in a row, and that 11th year, if you don't win, everybody's like, ah, oh, you're washed up. I'm like, God dang, that's crazy.
I just had this a 10-year run. You were
praising last year, but, I mean, that's just part of it. Exactly. It's like, okay, move out the way. This next person's coming.
Yeah.
And they're nowhere near as talented as you ever were in your career. Some of them are more talented. Some of them aren't. But people are intrigued by what's next.
Yeah.
And you get so good that at that point, people start rooting against you. The same people who cheered for you, now they're rooting against you. So it is what it is.
You know,
I see Dalila Muhammad in the race.
Mm-hmm.
She breaks the world record. And then Sydney McLaughlin is in the race. Now, potential out of this world. Don't get me wrong, but Dalila literally broke the world record. But everybody, Sydney. And I'm like, does that affect me or faze me? No, I get it. Like, I respect it. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
But seeing that, I actually respected Dalila a lot more, because I was like, especially the final, they were like, Sydney. I'm just like, this is the second time this girl just broke the world record. Are you really thinking about this? And she was in front of Sydney. I was just like, yo, she won that race by herself. That was all her. And that was impressive.
And talent like that doesn't come very often. Like, mm-hmm. what she did, like, she should have got all the praise in the world for what she did. And even Sydney gives her praise for that. And Sydney was upset that she didn't do that. So, I mean, like, I don't know. It's just, you can't control the media. I'm glad you all are doing this. Like, you get the true stories. Everybody cares about the result. Nobody cares about the hard work it took to get there. Yeah, so
exactly.
And people, and I feel like
shout in this day and age, doing this.
I feel like these stories got to get out, man, because it's affecting our society. I mean, I just feel like, when I just hear people, man, people, they don't have hope. The pandemic has crushed a lot of people. And it's like, you know, it's really hard. And so I think people need to hear that even though it's hard, you can make it through these situations. You know, you can find a way through them. You don't give up, because unfortunately, difficulty is a part of life. It's just a regular, normal part of life. It's going to come Absolutely. And go. It's going to ebb and flow. You know, you're going to have good days and bad days. And so, you know, even with this pandemic, you guys got to find a way to push through it and elevate yourself and others around you. Mm-hmm. So.
So while
I don't see any other way. Other option.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm going to say, if your life is perfect, and regardless, if your life is perfect, how can you relate to someone whose life isn't?
Yeah.
If I went through my whole career and everything was easy, how am I going to go mentor a kid who's going through something right now? I don't know what to tell them. I never experienced it. If you've never gone through any hardships. Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, when people, I tell people all the time, like, if you're going through something hard, I'm like, hey, look, you're going to get through this. And this is going to be a chapter of your life. It's not, this isn't meant for you. This is meant for someone down the road for you to share this with them.
Yeah.
Just push through. Just work through it. So.
See, for me, it's like, and I told this to LaShawn, I told this to Cherry, you know, you're working with these kids and, you know, you said you came up poor. These kids, a lot of them are coming up poor. You're talking about, you know, and they're going to look at you and be like, man, like he was running track. He got fast and traveled the world, you know, and did all these amazing things. And so, you know, it's going to be motivation for these young kids. They need to see that, you know, you know, get so good at something and build so much confidence and use it as a catalyst to just do whatever, you know, become a world champion. You know, all these stories about racing, you know, you were rival to the fastest person in history. You know, these are just experiences that without track, it would have been a whole different story. Mm-hmm. So I just love that, you know, you're up there as a role model for these kids, to give them something to strive for and help to facilitate that and teach them so that they can, you know, hopefully become future. I want to see what happens. I want to see if folks start running 18. So, you know, we need some of these folks to go ahead and you know, pursue some dreams.
Woo. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm gonna ask Wallace, what did you learn during the pandemic?
Actually, you had a question?
Yeah.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was asking, what did you learn during the pandemic?
Tomorrow is not promised, and this world is crazy. But as far as track and field, I mean, like, never take for granted what's right in front of you. Never take for granted and think that next year or my next race is going to be there. Bust your butt and don't wait. Do it now. I mean, because there's a lot of people. I saw people retire from last year. I saw people who, I mean, some of these people, it was a blessing. They were hurt. Now they have a chance to come back. Some of the people, it was a curse. You know, they were in the best shape of their life. And now I run the risk of getting hurt this next. So, I mean, just nothing is promised. Take advantage of every opportunity that you have.
And that's life in general. That's not just true. That's everything. Take advantage of those opportunities. That's life. You got to. There's something I want to ask you about, though. It's not track related. So you're a little bit of a car enthusiast. I saw that you had you know you like to.
yeah.
A little bit of a, you know, supercar enthusiast. So.
Nice.
Right. So yeah. I grew up riding motorcycles and whatnot. So speed has always just been a thing in my family. And so I have a Nissan GTR with 1600 horsepower, 0 to 200 in about 9 to 10 seconds.
What?
About a 7 second quarter mile car. And yeah, I bet say it's a rocket ship, bro. It's like I can't even say a roller coaster because that wouldn't be doing it justice. But I mean, it's fun. I haven't done it as much lately. Cause I'll tell you what, right now, this pandemic has definitely spread people's pockets out, cut people's pockets thin. So the car racing world is an expensive hobby. And yeah. I had to back off that a lot. I probably actually sell my car and
you want to sell it.
Start buying some land and investing. So yeah, I think I'm going to, man. It's time to grow up.
No more fun, man. No more toys.
That's risky stuff, man. I'm not exactly. Like, that's risky.
Man, you on
by no means am I rich.
You were on Mythbusters, man. I like watching that show. That's a funny show. Yeah, you thought I wasn't going to bring it up.
What you about to say?
They had you in there trying to run on water, man.
What you
man.
About to say, man?
I just saw they had you trying to run on water.
I've been on there 3 times, and I knew you were about to bring that one up. Yeah.
Wait, I didn't watch it, so you have to explain what exactly happened.
Nah, it's on YouTube. We got a video. So they want to see, YouTube. You know. They get one of the fastest people in the world. See,
I'll never tell anybody to YouTube or Google me.
Yeah, he's in there just head first into the water, man. It's pretty funny. If we had the editing skills, I'll pull it up right here.
So there was this shoe company, and they were trying to create, I mean, like before the things came viral, they were like, hey, you know, we need our shoe company to get a lot of media exposure. So they paid this company to come up with some idea on how to bring attention to their brand. So they had these guys go build this platform. They called it Liquid Mountain Engineering. So basically like running on water. They said, if you wear these special shoes, you can run on water. So Mythbusters was all about busting myths. So they went and bought the shoes and they were trying to bust the myth. Basically, it's bull crap. So they were like, okay, well, what happens if we bring somebody who's really fast? Can they run on water? Because, you know, like that's like the philosophy behind it. You know, like rock skipping, it's moving fast enough with this. So can it be done? I ate so much duck water.
I saw it.
It was cold. It was. So then they brought me on again and I raced an Indy car. And like they wanted to see if a human could run faster than an Indy car could drive in 30 feet. The answer is yes, but they cheated. They put reds on, regeared the car, and they had me in tennis shoes on wet concrete. I was like, if you give me,
and
the race is close,
yeah.
I don't have a good start. So if you give me spikes blocked on Mondo, like it's over with. But like Mr. like the owner of Penske was out there and he was like, hey, no, nah, nah. So the first time we raced off camera, I won. Mr. Penske came up there. He's like, this is Penske. We don't lose. So they came back. They had these new tires on there and all this other stuff. And I was like, what do they do? And all of a sudden, the car just started tearing me up. And I was like, wait, what?
He's like, hold on, hold on.
A minute ago.
Hold on. He's like,
this bunch of people. Right. The guy at it was Indy Motor Speedway, like from the Indianapolis 500. They came out and they were like, man, y'all are cheating. Like, those tires are literally qualifying tires. They're good for like four laps. And then you can't use them anymore. Y'all know what y'all, and they're changing tires like in between races. And I'm like, y'all are spending a lot of money to win this crap, man. Like they, it, like it means more. I can't wear spikes on concrete. This means more to you than me. So,
yeah. Yo, that's cheating. That thing that is stacked.
My mid-question fan.
That wasn't a fair race.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I heard they those two guys.
Like the car, those cars do what 220. Jamie, yeah, Jamie and Adam, cool, super smart, super cool.
But you know what though? I had read on something. They don't really get along. Were they cool on the show? They were.
If they don't get along, you can't tell.
Yeah, I read like yeah, they kind of. But
if I mean, I did the running on water and the other one, and both like they seem cool. To me. They seem like they were fine.
Yeah, man, they have. I mean, some
they were
cool
to me. Like they were both. What's the top end speed? How much pressure can you? Blah 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 blah. What's the metric unit? And I was like, y'all ask some questions that I don't even know what that means.
They're super nerdy. Yeah, that's cool.
You're awkwardly intelligent. You're awkwardly intelligent. Like you're so smart, you can't have regular conversation. But I mean, that was fun. Man. They were
it's
fun.
Like an alien in a human suit.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
What's the most interesting place you've been to? What's the most interesting place you've been to because of track? I was just curious.
Everyone asks that question, like people who don't really travel, where should I go? And I'm like, it really just depends on what you like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, where do you
no, like? I've been like a lot of places. I'm just curious for you, like what you thought.
I really don't, I don't know about the coolest place, but the coolest experience I had was we went to World Championship 2015 and my flight was at 7 a.m. So I remember looking out the plane and seeing the sunrise at 7 a.m. And when we landed in the U.S., it was 7 a.m. on the exact same day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So it's like I saw the sunrise twice on the same day. Like,
wow. That was
like I always. So, I mean, to me, that was really cool. And then, like, as far as places, I mean, like, if you like history and whatnot, I go to China. We saw the China Great Wall. Mm-hmm. Went to Rome and saw the cathedrals and all the history they had there. You go to the Nice, and then we drove on the coast of Nice to go to Monaco. And I remember the first time I went there, straight out of Arkansas. Well, like I told you, I was poor as I don't know what. Mm-hmm. Terrence Trammell was in the back. I sat in the front, and I was like, "Oh, they have cruises here." And he's like, "That's not a cruise. That's a yacht, you dummy." And I was like, "You mean that big old boat with the helicopter on it and the two things on the side is a cruise ship?" I was like, "It's not a cruise ship." I was like, "You're stupid." And they're like, "No, that's a yacht." And I was like, "Oh, okay. This is what money looks like." So I mean, yeah. Spain, you go there. The first time I went there, I thought I was about to eat Mexican food, like Tex-Mex in the U.S. No, stupid. Like, I was very uncultured when I was young. So, I mean, just literally, like, anywhere you go, you can find something. To Brazil for the first time. And then we saw Big Jesus and Copacabana Beach. And like, everywhere has something. So, my second home is Jamaica. Like, I love Jamaica. It's just, like, I couldn't sit here and name. Like, I never really. It just depends on who you're with, what you like. And the time of the year. I went to Australia. Yep. That was cool. I thought I was about to see kangaroos everywhere when I was young. That's false also. So I'm telling on myself right now.
You're just going around being disappointed everywhere. Like, man, I thought it was kangaroos. I thought it was penguins.
Yeah. Australia is
right. Exactly. Went to Africa. It's not a safari. It's sophisticated. Like they're advanced. They're civilized.
Yes. So, they don't live in huts. In Africa, folks, chill out with that.
And they drive regular cars, better cars.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Exactly. Though, when I was coming up, people used to think, you know, in the Caribbean, we lived in trees. You know, people are ignorant.
Yeah, no, I had that experience too. They asked if I live in a hut.
When like, we live in trees and we swing by our tails. Yeah, that's what we do.
I remember being, I'm not going to name his name right now, but I remember I was with the islander and somebody was like, what language are you speaking? He was like, English.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not English, blah, 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 blah. So they were going went off, and I was just like, oh my God. And they're like, where do you live there? Like, do you live like in like a like an Adobe house or something? He's like, yeah, and I play pinochle with your mom. And I was like, oh my God. Like, so
he was in a Jamaican.
To all my Americans who haven't really traveled, go visit things and see it. Like, see before you speak. It's okay to ask questions, kind of, but there are some things that are offensive.
Very offensive.
Yes, and speaking, sir. Speaking louder English does not make people understand you any better.
There was one more thing I wanted to ask you about before I don't want to take up all your time. I don't know if it's still a sensitive.
Oh, good.
A sensitive.
A little nervous.
I know. I don't know if it's
stepping on the line in Beijing in 08.
I want to ask about it. I was there. No, was I there? I wasn't there. But I was watching. I can't even imagine, man. I don't know if it's still, that's why I was like, man, is it, I don't know if it's still tender, a tender
no,
subject.
You're good. If I'm still sensitive about that, then I'm not living right. Like, I'm not that light.
I know, but sometimes you never know with people. Like, sometimes that one thing, you might have started crying and everything, bro.
For the people who don't know at home,
nah. Can you tell the story?
Yes. So
2008, once again, boats come out party. And we're in the Beijing finals, and I finished the race. I was in third place. I get about 350 meters into a victory lap, and Usain Bolt's agent, Ricky Sims, runs down to the stairs, and he's like, Wallace. I'm like, what's up, Ricky? And he's like, you were disqualified. And I'm like, who? And you can go watch this on the replays as well. Mm-hmm. He said, you're disqualified. And I was like, who? He's like, you, me. And he says, look up at the screen. And I look up at the screen, and it says, be cute. And like my soul left my body at that moment. Like I, in my mind, so Sean Crawford came out and he was like, man, this is bull crap. He's like, I don't want this. He's like, no, you got it. In my mind, I folded the flag neatly and handed it to him. But in reality, I balled the flag up and threw it at him and got death threats and everything for it. So, but right. Went into the protest room and the Team USA coaches are there. And I'm once again, like I'm going to be grown in an adult right now. I'm not going to use any names, but the head coach is there and they show me this picture and it's like this big. And they're like, look, you're disqualified. You stepped on the line. I was like, man, look, y'all gonna have to take me to jail or whoop me. But if you think you're about to disqualify me for this little bitty grainy picture, I was like, man, I'm about to fight everybody in here. Like, it's about this. No way. I was like, if I did it, I did it. Like, I'll take responsibility for my fault. But y'all not gonna DQ me off this. There's no way. So then finally, like, they came in and they showed this video and like, I like took everything in me not to cry. And I remember the head coach was like, hey, well, if you're going to DQ my guy for stepping on the line, you need to DQ Tarani because look at him. He's all in another lane. And he's like, and we need to get second and third. And I looked at him and like, I felt so betrayed at that moment. I was like, bro, you supposed to be in here fighting for me and you're going to DQ. Like, me and Tarani are cool. I was like, you're going to DQ my boy and try to get second and third? I was like, that's lame. And I looked at my agent and I was like, this is what you get paid for, handle it. And I walked out. And the only reason, like, I was aggressive right then, like as a male at that time, like I was taught not to show emotion and not to cry. So I knew I was about to bawl. So I'm like, I started crying and NBC cameras came up and I was like, man, get out my face. And they like still record. And I walked to the back. And at that time I had left Lance Brahman, my coach, but like he walked up to me and he just grabbed me and like, I never cried like that in my life. Like, I was hurt. And it was to the point where, like, I already knew. I had never told this story. Once again, like, no excuses. Either get it done or don't. But I knew before that race, I had torn cartilage in my knee. And I had a broke bone. So I felt like I let, like, my mom was there. Like, I let my family down. I felt like I let the doctors down. Because, I mean, I was getting rehab. Wake up at 6:30 a.m., go eat breakfast. At 7 o'clock, I'm in rehab. And I mean from 7 a.m. to 9, 10, 11 p.m. doing whatever. And that's like a month straight, trying to run. I wasn't giving up my spot. Like, I was going to run. And then for that to happen, I'm like, you know, I was just speechless. So for me, like, I've never been so hurt in my life. Like, I've never been so disappointed. And at the end of the day, like, still to this day, like I'll tell kids about that are coming up, like, man, like anything can happen in the sport. Like, you can have good and you can have bad, and you can have good and bad in the same meet. I literally just found a picture online of like that meet, and it's me with the flag, like celebrating. And I got criticized then too because Bolt broke the world record. Like I said, that's my boy. And I was more happy for him than myself. And there's a picture of me like picking Bolt up and celebrating. And I was like, bro, you did it. You did it.
Yeah.
And I'm waving the flag. I'm excited. And then it's like, it's just gone. So I went from like, in seventh grade, I had a teacher. And we had an assignment. And she said, what do you want to do when you grow up? Who do you want to be? And I said, I want to be an Olympian. Mm-hmm. And she failed me for that paper and was like, choose something more realistic. Now, rest in peace now. She got into an accident and passed away, but she ended up being my college coach's wife.
Oh, wow.
My long jump college coach's wife. And I mean, so like for me, I'll be honest with you all. It's one thing to say you're an Olympian, and you all know this as well. It's another thing to say you're an Olympic medalist. Like that's just, whether you like it or not, like there's tiers of our sport. And that's why, like, I always tell people, oh, you're a big dog, Wallace, you did this and you did that. And I'm like, I got the same amount of Olympic medals you do or anybody else off the streets. So, like, you can say whatever you want about my career. Oh, you did this and you're great. And, like, for me, like, I grew up saying I wanted to be an Olympian. To anybody listening to this, like, be more specific in your goals. I'm not telling you to chart everything out and be more detailed, but in my life, I thought it was okay to just be an Olympian. And then when I got older, I was like, okay, I'm an Olympian, now what? Okay, I need to be a medalist. Like, you already set your goals on what you wanted to do. Oh, I want to make nationals. I made nationals. Oh, I want to make finals. Like, that's not what you told your, that's not what you prepared your body for. Yeah. You prepared just to make it to nationals. Now what are you going to do when you get here? So, like, find people, mentor you or have them talk to you, and they can help you with that type of stuff. It's one thing to be an Olympian. Like, what are you going to do when you get there? Because if you go and you make the Olympic team and you bomb out, you don't make it out the first round and you know you had the potential to do it and you don't make another Olympic Games, that's going to haunt you for the rest of your life. So be prepared before you get there. Usually, if you find that you made a mistake, it's not in that moment where you made the mistake. It's before then. So it was probably in the preparation. If I messed up in my acceleration phase of my race, I probably messed up in my drive phase or my block starts. Like stuff usually just doesn't happen. So preparation is key and your mindset is key. And my coach always used to tell me, you know, people always ask me, how do you run faster? And he's like, choose your pants wisely. So, I mean, like there's things that you can control and there's things that you can't control. What you can control.
Control what you can control.
Yeah. And it sounds like that right there to me sounds like life in a nutshell.
Give God the rest.
Yeah.
That even as successful as right. you got, you still have to deal with some real disappointment and that's life. But it's like, you know, how I always like to say is that if you don't make the goal in the first place and you don't start on a journey, then you don't end up anywhere. So you went on a journey, and even though in your eyes you fell short, you still ended up being one of the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ninth fastest time in history, that goes a long way. So even though you didn't get that ultimate goal you wanted, that journey, I mean, that's significant, man. It does matter. So
remember,
I know it doesn't make yet. Up for the fact that you know what happened, but
remember, he's not done yet, though.
No,
he might pop up.
He's younger than me. I think you're like a year younger than me, so you still have a lot of things. I feel like you're younger than me.
84, I'm 36.
84, but October, you're December. Right?
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
I got you youngin'. So. You still have a lot of time, man.
I like it. Already.
So how can we find you?
The baby of the group. You ain't
there yet. Ashley's the baby of the group. Man. She's still in the game.
I'm still in the game. I'm
Oh, yeah. She's running. Yeah,
How old are you?
I just made 30. Made that 3-0.
Like I said, 28.
I wish. In my mind, I'm 28.
I like it.
So how do our listeners find you, man? Where can they track you down?
Stay there.
Yeah.
Man, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Prince Spearman.
TikTok.
Prince Spearman on everything. YouTube, Prince Spearman. I have an account, but I watch. I don't listen, I don't contribute.
Come on, man.
My mom sends me a TikTok every day.
My mom sends me a TikTok every day. I got a TikTok so I can. Yeah, my mom knows all the dances and everything. So yeah, she's hip. I don't know what I am. I guess I'm ancient now. Like I still remember Black Planet and MySpace.
Hey man, you bring it up. Yeah, don't talk Black Planet. I know they don't. All these young folks don't know about Black Planet. That was we're kind of old, man. You're almost going back to MySpace days.
I tell these kids I work with now, I'm like, exactly. I tell these kids, I'm like, if you never gone outside and got your own Twitch to get a whooping, then like we ain't got nothing to talk about. Like you don't understand where I'm coming from.
No, they don't even have whoopings these days.
No, don't. Let's not even get into that.
I think it's illegal now.
Yeah, well, in some circles, I suppose. I'm not even no comment. All right, I got. Listen, folks. I am an Ivy League head coach, and I got whippings. My grandmother did not play games, so you guys could say what you want about the effectiveness of whippings, but
I turned out all right.
I could not have, if I didn't have straight A's, there were going to be consequences. So, you know. Hold on, let me give my shout out to another Gamecock, James Law, who is running his own. Yeah, I got to. We gotta represent with the 4th and Avery brand. Go get yourself one, and you can use the what's the discount code? Homestretch, 20% off. Yeah, I know. This is nice. So go support some Black business. You know, Brother Starter's own watch company. That's big. So go ahead and buy yourself. They're pretty dope, I think, and a lot of different kinds. There's like a black and gold one that I need to get because that one's fly. So, Ashley, did he send you one? He was supposed to send you one.
He has the women designs, so definitely go out and support Black businesses. Check out 4th and Avery. Follow man Wallace Spearman Jr. on Prince Spearman on all social media platforms.
I know. We got to follow him and see what he's up to this year because he was kind of being vague, but we kind of get the idea. So we're going to keep a lookout.
That's all he got to say. He's training.
Hey, those young boys better be careful. They can say what they want. A veteran in the game is always dangerous, man. Especially, you know, I want to see.
Oh, really?
All right, brother. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Y'all be safe.
Anytime. Take care of yourself, man. We're going to be following.